here's where we're going with this lesson. Our goal is to think about debt correctly so that we can learn to manage it, reduce it, and eventually eliminate and avoid it. And as we learned last month, indebtedness is not unbiblical or sinful if we approach it with wisdom and with the right motives. But we've all failed in that probably many times in our life. I certainly have. Please don't make me count them for you. So first, we're going to talk about some basic principles, or ground rules, if you will, about managing your existing debt going forward. And then we're going to look specifically at four common types or areas of debt that almost all of us have had to or will have to manage in our lifetimes. And those are credit cards, student loans, car payments, and home mortgages. Kind of in the order that you'll probably encounter them in your life. And then finally, we'll consider, for our example, the greatest debt payoff ever made. Okay? Everybody got your papers ready? Okay, here we go. Number one, tackling your debt. Point A, understand the reason why you have debt. So we're not going to pretend that I got this debt, I don't know where it came from, and I don't know why I chose to let this happen to me. I'm not going to say that. It's important that we be truthful with ourselves, truthful with others, and realistic about what our situation is. Why do we have debt? Do we have it because of greed, or impatience, or materialism? Maybe we had an emergency, couldn't help it. Maybe we inherited it. Was it intentional? Which is okay under some circumstances, we're managing, right? So we're just gonna make sure we understand the reason. We must understand the root cause and the heart condition about why we have debt. Point B, repent of sinful behavior. If the motive was sinful, then repent and seek help and accountability to battle that. Point C, we're going to commit to no new debt. This is going to be difficult at the beginning. Trials will come. We're going to have unexpected expenses, things we didn't prepare for, that are going to mess us up. As soon as we say we have no new debt, there'll be something that comes up in our lives that says, oh, I'm going to need some new debt. But when that happens, seek wise counsel first. As we've said, if it's an emergency, something that's out of our control, and you haven't been able to organize your life yet financially to handle it, well, maybe you do have to take some on, but we'd like to avoid taking on new debt, and so let's start by making the commitment to no new debt. Why do we want to do that? When you sit down and you look at all the money that you owe and your interest and the payments that you're making, when things are static, even if you have debt, it's possible to calculate, all things being equal, a day when you won't have it, because you'll be able to project it out in the future and know how long. When you purchase a mortgage, they tell you your house is going to be paid off on this date. Same way with our debt. Now, if we keep changing the equation by adding new debt, then we lose our ability to calculate when things are going to be over. Now, the converse of that is when we get some item paid off, you know, we can recalculate again because we can start applying that money to existing debt. But for sure, taking on new debt always going to push your debt-free date out to the future. Item D, save for emergencies. And these two ideas go together. Your ability to make good on your commitment to no new debt at the beginning, a large part depends on whether you have an emergency fund or not, because emergencies will be the things that trip you up the very first time. So a lack of an emergency fund can force you to take on new debt. They can force you to reach for the credit card. Okay, letter E, save for future planned expenses. What we want to avoid are situations where things that we should have known about, quote, take us by surprise. We don't want our vacation to Italy to take us by surprise and say, oh, where's my money? I have an emergency. I'm going to have to go on vacation, and I didn't save any money. I didn't plan for that. So look ahead so you aren't surprised by big new expenses. Do you have a child going to college? Do you have a daughter in the family who's going to get married someday? Have you promised your wife we're going to go to Italy for 6 weeks in a couple of years? Yeah. I have to plan for those things. Okay, letter F. Pay your debts. We are God's ambassadors, yes? We want to be known as people who keep our word and keep our commitments. Psalm 37, verse 21 says, "The wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives." That's how we want to be. Okay, letter G. Most situations do not warrant a bankruptcy. This is not the position of our worldly society. To many, bankruptcy is a convenient way to get out of a commitment that they don't want anymore. But we can't use bankruptcy like that. Like it or not, debt is a commitment that we must seek diligently to honor. Bankruptcy is an extreme measure that's to be exercised only in extreme situations. And if you read Brad Graber's paper on this, he'll go into that in a little bit more detail, some examples of where bankruptcy might actually be the appropriate thing to do. Okay, our conclusion, point A. Getting out of debt will not be simple or easy. And point B, the hardest debt to erase will always be the first one. But once you eliminate that first one, you gain ground, and you have new resources with which to tackle the next one. If you pay off something that's costing you $100 a month, what we don't want to do is say, ha-ha, I've got another $100 a month that I could spend on Starbucks. You say, no, I've got another $100 a month that I could put toward this next credit card, that I should put toward this next credit card, or whatever the next thing is on my list. And so you continue to gain ground that way. Okay, those are our ground rules. Section number two, credit card survival guide. Point A, credit cards are simply tools. I hope I don't have to explain to anyone who's an adult here to remember that credit cards are not actually money. They just represent money. Now, they do have some benefits. Point B, there are some benefits to using credit cards. Number one, they offer freedom and flexibility that cash does not. What do we mean by that? Well, credit cards, general sense, are kind of universally accepted funds. So you have money that's readily available to you. So that gives you flexibility and ease of conducting commerce that cash doesn't always have. Number two, they offer protection that debit cards do not. So let's make a distinction between credit cards and debit cards. With a credit card, you purchase something and you have an extended period between the purchase and the actual withdrawal from your account. So you have time to correct errors, or you have time to correct fraud or other kinds of misuses before that actually hits your bank account. So credit cards do give you that extra cushion of time, generally. With a debit card, you make a purchase, the money maybe doesn't disappear from your account right at that moment, but it is certainly locked up and allocated. Your available balance immediately goes down, even if the money hasn't been sent out yet. You probably realize that. You make a purchase on a Friday afternoon with a debit card, it may not actually disappear from your account till Monday when the bank's open again, but that amount that you purchased is locked and your balance does effectively go down. Okay, number three, credit cards offer rewards, redeemable credits. Okay, point C, There are some risks to using credit cards. Number one, their research continues to show that people spend more when using a piece of plastic than when using cash. And we said a few minutes ago, remember that credit cards only represent money, and we don't equate actual value with plastic the way that we do with cash. So we're likely to spend more when using a credit card. Research continues to show us, on average, about 25 to 26% more. For the same item, you might be willing to spend another 25% higher price for it if you've already decided you're going to pay for it with your plastic than to hand over money by taking it out of your wallet. Okay, so there's a mental or a psychological issue with value of plastic versus cash that you need to be aware of so that you can override that in your mind and not be conditioned to think that, well, it's not hurting me to pay a higher price because I'm using credit card. Okay, number two, credit cards charge high interest rates. This is a soapbox for me. This is one of the reasons I don't use credit cards is because I just hate the fact that the credit card companies are counting on me to fail. And they are. You know, the penalty for not paying the balance due each month is harsh. And the credit card companies are hoping that you will fail to do so. Okay, letter D. There are ways to wisely manage credit cards. Keep your credit limit reasonable. Why have a credit limit that's higher than is practical and wise? Also, if you have that high limit, somebody actually could steal it and spend that much money on you. So if you have a low limit, then your risk for fraud and theft is much less as well. Okay, D2, choose a card with no annual fee. I think that's self-explanatory. D3, never buy anything that isn't in your budget. We're all formulating budgets, and we're planning ahead of time to spend just the things that we've allocated. If we buy things that aren't in our budget, then we've made an impulse buy. Now, I'm discounting emergencies, but if we buy things that are not in our budget, then we've done damage to our good planning. If you want to buy something that's not in your budget, go home, talk to your spouse, say we need to adjust the budget so that we can save money to pay for that thing, then we can go buy it. Okay, D4, pay off your balance every month. No exceptions. Why? We made the commitment we're not going to take on new debt. If we don't pay the credit card balance off every month, then we're taking on new debt. Even though we didn't purchase anything, we're going to get interest. New debt comes into the equation. Okay, conclusion. The consequence of being on the losing side is severe. But for the informed and disciplined, that's point B, informed and disciplined, the benefits can outweigh the costs. I'll share a little story when about 15 years ago when Trina and I were working together to get rid of our debt. We had $10,000, maybe $15,000 on various credit cards. We had three or four of them. And Trina was very shrewd. It took us a couple of years, but if you have credit cards, especially if you have more than one of them, you're probably getting offers for new credit cards in the mail all the time. Yes? Anybody? Yeah? Okay. Along with those offers, what commonly comes with them? Sometimes offers for 6 months interest-free if you will transfer your balance from your old card to your new card, or maybe if it's not interest-free, maybe it's only a percent or two for the first 6 months. So if you are shrewd and take advantage of those things, like my wife did, she would take this credit card that we owed a lot of money on at a high interest rate, transfer the balance over to this introductory offer for 6 months. Now what just happened? Now we have 6 months to continue paying that balance down without accruing any more interest on it. And just before that 6 months would run out, we'd get another introductory offer in the mail. And she would pay that second one off, pop it over into the new one. You can play the credit card company's games against them if you are disciplined. We were able to almost pay no interest on our credit card balance for a few years while we were paying this off because we kept flipping it like that. Okay, going on. Number three, college considerations. Point A, student loans are dangerous. Point one, they're easy to get. Number two, student loans are targeted at an ignorant and naive audience. Now, don't take offense to that when I say ignorant. I don't mean that your children are stupid or that you're stupid. I just mean ignorant means uninformed. Okay, you've got college students not used to handling things like this. They go into the finance office of their college and they say, hey, I can't afford my tuition. I say, I will give you a loan. Okay, point three. There are very few consumer protections on student loans. Student loans have a very interesting history. Student loans are government-backed, and by law, there's no legal way out of that debt because they're government-backed. You can't include a student loan in a bankruptcy, for example, even if you have a dire emergency. So they're almost the very worst kind of loan you can acquire, because they're almost impossible to escape from in an emergency. And I also think, I just don't want my kids to start life from college with $50,000 or $60,000 worth of debt hanging on to them. So as parents, that's something we should counsel about as well. So my conclusion for college considerations, point A, be careful not to overvalue a college's prestige or its educational value to the point where it enslaves you with unnecessary debt. Section 4, death to the car payment. Everybody has heard this myth, you're always going to have a car payment. How many people have said that to themselves or to their spouses? I have. We're always going to have a car payment. Monthly payments can be used to manipulate you into spending more money than you otherwise would. When you go to purchase a car, that's why salespeople rarely talk to you about the total purchase price of the car, right? They just say, this is what the monthly payment is. I've even had the experience when we go in and say, I got cash in hand, I want to take that one. They'll still try to take me in and go, you don't want to pay cash for it. Lay out all that money all at once, you know, let us set you up with a loan. 4A, car payments violate two basic financial principles. Number one, you should never use debt to buy a depreciating asset. And cars, by and large, are depreciating assets. You're losing value immediately. As soon as you sign on the dotted line and you drive your car off the lot, you can never resell it for what you just paid for it. Okay, number two, do not let your spending deny reality. Can you afford the car that you want? Can you afford a car at all? You need to ask yourself those questions. If you don't think you can answer them honestly for yourself, then go get wise counsel and have someone sit down with your budget and let's see. Can you actually afford a car? How much can you really afford to spend on a car? Should you be riding the bus? Should you be buying a Schwinn instead of a Ford? 4B, end the car payment cycle. Point one, keep your car longer than the length of your loan. Good rule of thumb, commit to keeping your car for twice the length of your loan period. So let's say you're in a car loan already that's 5 years long. Well, commit to keeping the car for 10. When you get to year 6 and your car loan is paid off, continue to make car payments into a savings account. By that time, you've probably already got a car payment built into your budget because you're going to have a car payment forever, right? So take your car payment, start putting it in the bank. And then in 5 years, your old car is 10 years old. Now you have the money to pay cash for a new car. And you'll have the point two, you'll have cash and and trade-in value to buy your next car. So our conclusion, point A, imagine your budget with no car payments. And B, ground your decisions in reality. Section 5, a place to call home. A, there are many common myths about the rent or buy decision. First myth, renting is just throwing your money away. That's not true. Renting, if done wisely, is not a waste. You have no repair expenses. You have no property tax. You have no large down payment outlay. You have freedom to move without having to sell a piece of property. And there's always expenses that go along with that. So there are some good things. Myth number two, buying a home is always a good investment. Property doesn't always appreciate in value. And even if it does, there are still significant ownership expenses. You have mortgage interest. You have property taxes. You have maintenance. You have homeowners insurance. You have all the expenses of upkeep. Myth number three, renting helps you avoid debt. It's not really true. Although the term may be shorter, you are still in a debt contract if you have a lease. I'm going to give you a fourth one. How many of you had parents that told you you should never pay off your mortgage because you'll lose a big income tax deduction? Who told you that? A mortgage broker. Someone with no vested interest in your answer, right? I accepted that advice from my parents for a long time. It took me a while. But one day, I was talking with this financial counselor who said, wouldn't you rather have 100% of your house payment cash in hand than 20 or 30% of it in your income tax refund? And I'm going, yeah. So take it from someone who doesn't have a mortgage payment anymore. Don't discount the vast contentment of paying off your mortgage. Okay, point B, things to consider about your rent or buy decision. Number one, rent if you are new to the area. What are you doing? You're allowing time to evaluate where to put down roots because it's costly to move if you change your mind. Number two, rent if you will be staying only for a short time. Of course, that makes sense. There's a lot of hassle with buying and selling property. It's a lot of expense buying and selling property. If you know you're only going to be in a place for a short time, then just rent. Save yourself all of that expense and hassle. Number three, rent if you do not have an adequate down payment. Why do we say that? I'm going to go back to Albert's mortgage broker. Will your mortgage broker give you a mortgage without a significant down payment? Usually, a down payment of less than 20% will require additional PMI. You heard that acronym? PMI stands for private mortgage insurance. In other words, because you're not putting much down on your mortgage, because you're not personally vested in that mortgage very much, the mortgage company will actually take out insurance against you defaulting on your mortgage. And guess who has to pay the insurance cost? You. Okay, conclusion. Point A, do not commit your entire budget to the desires of the flesh. And B, contentment should be the hallmark of a Christian's financial life. Okay, point six, the greatest debt payoff ever. Point A, we all owe a debt to God that we cannot repay. It's a debt we were all born into because of Adam's sin, but we weren't born into it unjustly. Each one of us is culpable for our own sin before God. There are no management techniques. There are no financial disciplines no meritorious efforts that we can employ that will enable us to settle this debt. B, the penalty for our inability to repay our debt of sin is spiritual death and eternal punishment. Romans 6 tells us the wages of sin is death. Point C, God is holy, righteous, and just. And because of that, God cannot associate or tolerate sin. The only currency that God will accept for payment of this debt of sin is righteousness. Unfortunately, that's a currency that none of us has. So someone else will have to pay that debt for us. That is our hope. Christ is that hope, who paid that debt with his own blood. Point D. Christ, by his sinless life, atoning death, and authoritative resurrection, transferred our debt to his account, transferred his righteousness to ours. So our conclusion, point A, believers have received the greatest debt payoff ever. What is the size of our debt? It's beyond measure. What's the penalty for non-payment? Eternal punishment in hell. What's our ability to reconcile? It's impossible. So what is our only hope? Our hope is faith in a divine creditor, if you will, who out of love has canceled our debt with his own blood and then also gave us everything he has. So as we seek to manage our own worldly debt in a manner that honors our Lord, let us also never forget the eternal debt that he paid on our behalf.